welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, showcasing programs from radio's yesteryear. I'm your host, Mark Thevenier. Stay tuned for an hour of adventure. Later on, we hear Orson Welles head up to Mercury Summer Theater. But right now, the Gulf Screen Guild Theater from December 1st, 1940 on CBS, where Fred McMurray and Marlena Dietrich star in the play Desire.
The Gulf Screen Guild Theater. Your host, the director of the Star's own theater, Roger Pryor.
Good evening, everyone. Your neighborhood Good Gulf dealer and the Gulf Oil Companies welcome you to the Gulf Screen Guild Theater. Tonight, we bring you Marlena Dietrich and Fred McMurray in one of the most amusing stories ever screened, Desire. This is Marlena's first radio appearance of the year, marking another Gulf Theater first. The Gulf Theater is the only theater that can bring you all your favorite stars, ladies and gentlemen, because in return for their performances, Gulf contributes generously to the Motion Picture Relief Fund, which, as you know, is providing a home for the many unfortunate people in all branches of the picture industry who can no longer provide for themselves. That burst of applause is for our two stars who just entered from the wings. Frank Tours is ready to conduct Oscar Bradley's Gulf Orchestra in the opening theme of Desire, in which Marlena Dietrich plays the role of Madeline and Fred McMurray plays Tom. I play the part of Dr. Henderson. Downbeat, Frank, and the show is on. The story starts in the exclusive shop of Henry Duval, the jeweler. The great Duval himself is showing pearl necklaces to a strange woman, a woman he's never seen before, a silky voice, beautiful woman, strikingly dressed.
This, madame, is the finest string of pearls in America. It is the celebrated Eldridge necklace.
They are exactly what I've been looking for, Mr. Duval.
I believe I have not had the pleasure of serving before. Mrs.
Henderson.
Not Mrs. Whitford Henderson.
Yes, you know the name?
But who doesn't know it? The great Dr. Henderson, the famous nerve specialist?
How much is the necklace?
Only $200,000, madame.
Most reasonable, Mr. Duval. If you will bring it to Dr. Henderson's office at 6 o'clock, he'll give you the check.
Thank you, madame. I will be there at 6 o'clock sharp. It will be a great pleasure to meet the great Dr. Henderson.
At 6 o'clock, the great nerve specialist, Dr. Henderson, is visited at his office by a woman he's never seen before. A silky voice. Beautiful woman, strikingly dressed. I'm sorry to have kept you waiting. Please sit down, Mrs.
Mrs. Duval.
Not Mrs. Henry Duval.
Yes, Dr. Henderson. You know the name?
Well, who hasn't heard the name of the great jeweler, Henry Duval?
It is about Henry that I've come to you, Dr. Henderson. Oh, doctor, it is dreadful.
There, Mrs. Duval. I'm sure I can help you. Now tell me all about it.
Well, doctor, for the past few weeks, Henry has been having, I suppose you'd call them, hallucinations.
Can you describe them?
Well, he sometimes imagines he's a schoolgirl running away from school. And he's given up pajamas and taken to wearing nightgowns.
Oh, I don't like that.
I don't like it either. Oh, it all seems so hopeless.
Not at all, not at all. We'll have him out of his nightgowns and into his pajamas in no time.
I asked him to meet me here at 6 o'clock. I thought it would be less trying for him to see you after your office hours. No people about, you know.
Yes, of course.
And one other thing.
Yes?
Don't be surprised if he presents you with a bill. He does it everywhere, and to people he never even met before. It's so embarrassing.
You just leave that to me.
Perhaps I'd better wait for him outside in your waiting room.
Certainly, Mrs. Duval. You just let me know when he arrives.
Good evening, Mr. Duval. You're right on time.
I try to be prompt, Mrs. Henderson.
The doctor's in his office. He'll see you in a moment.
Thank you.
You, brought the pearls?
Of course.
May I see them once more?
Oh, with pleasure.
Oh, it is a beautiful necklace, isn't it? I can't wait to put it on. May I?
Oh, allow me. There. Very beautiful. A perfect setting for perfect pearls.
Thank you. And now shall we see my husband?
Oh, certainly.
May we come in?
Come in.
May I introduce Dr. Henderson, Mr. Duval?
How do you do?
Charles.
Perhaps I'd better leave you two gentlemen alone for a while.
Perhaps it would be better.
I'm sure it'll be. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Please be seated, Mr. Duval. Henry Duval, right?
Just make it out to Duval and Company.
Duval and Company. Oh, uh-huh.
Here is the bill.
$200,000. Uh-huh. Mr. Duval, how do you sleep?
How do I sleep? Oh, fine, fine. And you?
Oh, fine, thank you. Yes. Which side do you sleep on, your left?
No.
Your right?
No.
On your back?
No, really, doctor, I can't see what difference...
I'm very sorry, but you must answer my questions clearly. Now, which side do you sleep on?
I sleep on my stomach.
Why don't you like pajamas?
Pajamas?
Pajamas!
If you just give me my check and let me go...
Why please. Do you want $200,000?
For the pearls I just gave your wife.
Now listen to me. You didn't give any pearls to my wife. I haven't got a wife.
You're crazy.
Where do you buy your nightgowns?
Nightgowns? I never bought a nightgown in my life. I'm a bachelor.
That beautiful woman who just left this room, who is she?
She's your wife.
Oh, no, she's your wife.
I tell you, she's your wife.
She's your wife.
She's your wife.
She's your wife.
Better slow down a little, Madeline. We don't want to get picked off by some speed cop.
Why are you so nervous, Olga?
Well, you've been at this game as long as I have. You'll know enough to be nervous. If we get caught, we'll get 5 years.
No, 7. I looked it up. But don't worry, nothing's gone wrong so far. I've got the pearls and we're headed for Mexico.
Yes, but it's still a long way to the border. Where are the pearls?
Right here in my purse.
I wish they were safe in Carlos' pocket in Mexico City. The swine. There he sits and we take all the risk.
Oh, stop worrying, Olga. I'm going to pass that blue roadster. Oh, dear. My horn is stuck.
Hey, stop honking. If you want to pass me, pass me.
My horn is stuck.
Oh, well, stop. I'll fix it for you.
Can you fix it?
Oh, sure. I'm an automobile designer.
Can you fix it?
He said he could.
Well, hurry up. It's killing me.
I'll have it in a minute.
Leave him alone, Olga.
He's driving me nuts.
There you are. It's very simple. I mean, there you are. It's very simple.
Thank you. I don't know what we'd have done.
Oh, don't mention it. It was a pleasure. Very annoying, these horns. I've been noisy and, my name's Tom Bradley.
Thank you. You're very kind.
Oh, not at all. You going south, Miss?
We are not certain.
Neither am I. You know, I was just thinking, your horn might get stuck again any minute. It might be sort of a good idea if I followed you.
Oh, no.
Well, I mean just to take care of your horn.
Oh, no, please. I wouldn't think of taking you out of your way.
Oh, it wouldn't be taking me out of my way. You see, I'm on a vacation. I don't care where I go.
That's fine. We happen to be going the other way.
Thank you again, and goodbye.
Oh, well, wait a minute. Goodbye. Lovely, lovely, lovely. South of the border, down Mexico way. I'll bet that
place. That Mr. Bradley is still following us, Olga. He's been right behind us all the way from Dallas.
He's got a gleam in his eye that would start a 3-alarm fire.
He is rather attractive, though, don't you think?
No, I don't. Got more crust than a loaf of fresh bread.
Well, we'll probably lose him when we get across the border and into Mexico. That lineup of cars ahead must be the customs place. Do you think it'll be a good place to leave the necklace in my purse?
Sure. They only give things a quick once over at the Mexico border. Hey, better slow up. That customs officer's flagging us down.
All right.
Keep in line, please. Pull up close behind this other car for inspection, miss.
Hey, this don't look so hard. Ask him what goes on.
Officer?
Yes, miss?
Will we be delayed long?
That all depends, miss. Have all luggage open and ready for inspection, please.
I don't like the way he said that.
Neither do I. We've been told to look for something. And 10-1, it's the necklace.
We've got to get it out of your purse and plant it somewhere.
Olga, take the wheel.
Huh?
I've got an idea. It's our only chance.
Wait! Where are you going?
Mr. Bradley just drove us behind us in the blue roadster. I'm going to ride with him.
I don't get it.
They're looking for a girl and a pearl necklace. Well, when they search me, I won't have the necklace.
Why don't you?
Because I'm slipping it into Mr. Bradley's coat pocket.
Say, that's taking an awful long chance.
Don't worry. After we're safe across the border, I'll pick his pocket and get it back. I'll meet you in Mexico City. And I'll have the necklace.
You better have it. Carlos wants this necklace bad. I'm afraid he won't appreciate any slip-ups.
Look out. Here comes Mr. Bradley. I'll see you in Mexico City.
Hello there. Oh, are you getting out? Allow me.
Thank you.
There we are. Say, you're more than I expected. You know, this is the first time I've seen your legs. I mean, this is the first time I've seen you standing up.
It does feel good to walk about a bit.
Yes, it does, doesn't it? The heat's really bracing, don't you think?
You're very charming, Mr. Bradley.
Oh, do you think so? You want to know something?
Yes.
I don't know your name.
Madeleine Beaupré.
Well, pleased to meet you. I mean, really meet you.
Just wait for examination, please. Your next, miss.
Thank you, officer. Oh, I'm so sorry, Mr. Bradley. I stumbled.
Oh, nothing to be sorry about.
Did I hurt you?
Hurt me? Your bumping into me hurt me? Oh, it was wonderful.
You're so kind and understanding.
Oh, thanks.
And so strong.
Well, yeah.
I have a wonderful idea. But I don't know whether I dare suggest it.
Oh, well, go right ahead.
I'm so tired of driving. I think it would be fun to ride in your car for a little way.
To ride in my car? You mean you do that? Hey, that'd be great. That'd be wonderful. That'd be swell.
Up the border, down Mexico way.
You comfortable?
Mm-hmm.
Happy?
Uh-huh. You know, you really shouldn't have taken off your coat.
Oh, you've been worrying all day about my taking off that coat.
I'm afraid you'll catch cold.
Oh.
You men are all alike. You're like children. There you were, wearing a coat, and I left you alone for just a moment to have my luggage examined. And the next thing I knew...
The coat was in the suitcase. What of it?
And where is the suitcase?
Oh, it's back in the luggage compartment. Off the border, down. You comfortable?
Mm-hmm.
Happy?
Uh-huh.
You like me a little better now, don't you? You know, I guess I sort of grow on people. I remember a few years ago, I met a girl who didn't like me at first, but I grew on her.
And what happened?
She sued me.
I'm afraid you are Don Juan.
You want to know something?
I think so.
You won't be angry now. It's kind of bright.
Go ahead.
Well, I wish we could be stranded right here on the road for 10 days without a soul around us.
Why, Mr. Brad?
No, I can't help it. That's what I wish.
Are you sure you aren't taking cold?
Does that really worry you?
It does, really.
Oh, boy. Why?
Well, three reasons. First, I like you, and I shouldn't like to see you ill. Second, if you get a cold, I may catch it sitting so close to you. And third, my hands are getting cold, and it would be nice to have a pocket to put them into.
Oh. Well, if you're cold, I guess I'll have to do something about it.
Oh, what was that?
No, I just pressed the button and put up the automatic top.
Oh. Oh, but the coat.
Oh, I won't need it now with the top up. You comfortable now?
Uh-huh.
You happy?
Uh-huh.
Oh, boy. South of the border, down Mexico.
It's 3 days later. Madeline and her adopted aunt Olga have arrived in Mexico City, where they are to meet Carlos, head of a gang of international jewel thieves.
Carlos, I tell you, there was no other way. If I hadn't slipped the necklace into his pocket, Olga and I would have been caught at the border.
I'm not complaining about that. What I want to know is this. Why haven't you recovered it?
I haven't had a chance.
Now listen to me, Madeleine. I want those pearls, and I'm going to have them. You'll invite Mr. Bradley to have dinner with us tonight. You'll wear this imitation string of pearls and introduce me as Uncle Carlos. Also, you will see if Mr. Bradley is dressed in the right coat. You understand?
Yes, Carlos. I understand.
I hope you do. Because if anything goes wrong tonight, Mr. Bradley may have an accident. Do I make myself clear? Now go and find him. Another spot of brandy, Mr. Bradley.
Yes, thanks.
Madeline tells me you are an automobile designer.
That's right. What's your line?
Oh, I've retired. I travel around and amuse myself with a hobby or two.
Oh, what kind of hobbies?
Well, magic for one. I know quite a few tricks, don't I, Madeline?
Yes, Uncle Carlos. Why don't you do one for Mr. Bradley?
Yeah, go ahead. I like magic.
All right. Let me see. Madeline, may I have your pearls for a moment?
Of course. Here.
Thank you. Now, Mr. Bradley, you see these pearls in my hand.
Yeah.
Now, watch closely. One, two, three, presto.
You see, they're gone.
Hey, that's pretty good.
Now, where can the lost necklace be? Under the table? No. In my hand? No. Mr. Bradley, will you kindly look in the left pocket of your coat?
Huh? Oh, sure. Well, I'll be darned. How did they get in my pocket?
Ah, that's the trick, Mr. Bradley. I'll take them, please. Thank you. Now, if you both excuse me, I'll do another trick and make myself disappear. Adios.
Good night.
Good night.
Hey, he's a pretty clever guy, isn't he?
Yes. But now I think you'd better say good night, too.
Oh, not yet. It's early. Don't make me go yet. Look, let's go out on the balcony for a minute and get some of that Mexican air, huh?
But, well, all right. But just for a minute.
Swell night, isn't it? Look at the moon.
It's wonderful. It's a beautiful night.
Yeah.
You seem nervous.
Do I? I guess I am.
Why should you be nervous?
I don't know. I didn't know I had a nerve in my body until tonight. Madeline, listen. This is the first vacation I've had in my life, and in a few days I'll have to be back in Detroit, and all the fun will be over.
You know, Mr. Bradley, the moon is very becoming to you.
Oh, you're not even listening.
Oh, yes, I heard everything you said. I heard more than you said.
Did you hear that I love you?
Yes.
I'm crazy about you, Madeline. It's hit me all of a sudden. I'm in love with you. For 3 days we've been together, and now I don't want to be away from you ever.
Come here, Tom.
No. No, you come here. If you come here, I'll know that. Madeline. And to think that 3 days ago I didn't know anything about you.
You didn't even exist.
It's crazy, isn't it?
It's wonderful.
You're going to marry me.
Oh, Tom, darling. Let's run away from here.
Yeah.
Let's go far away. Chile, Africa, Australia.
Detroit. We're going to Detroit. I have my word.
Oh, of course you have, dear.
And I have a headache.
Olga.
Oh, hello, Aunt Olga.
It's bad enough having to drive all that distance alone without having to listen to you two mooning on the balcony. Get out of here, young man. I have something to say to Madeline.
Better go, Tom.
All right.
I'll see you in the morning.
Yeah, see you in the morning. Good night.
Good night, dear.
Good night, sweetheart.
Well, I've talked to Carlos and he feels great. He has the pearls, so that's settled. Now, what about this business?
You mean Tom?
Mm-hmm. It's serious, huh?
Very serious.
That's what I thought.
He wants me to go away with him, marry him.
Well?
I'm going to do it, Olga. You and Carlos can sell the necklace. I don't want any part of it.
Carlos won't let you run out on him. He needs you to finish this deal.
If I want to go, how can he hold me?
He has ways. Oh, look, Madeline, get wise to yourself. It's no good. I was in love once with a doctor in Los Angeles. And we used to dream what you're dreaming now. And then right in the dream, I'd feel a hand on my shoulder. The hand of the police.
You didn't ever tell him about yourself?
No. Told him I had a husband in Chicago. That I had to go back to him. That way I didn't spoil it. I couldn't tell him the truth.
I've got to tell Tom the truth.
That's what you think now. But when the time comes, don't forget the story about her husband in Chicago. Good night, kid.
Tom, please sit down. I've something I've got to tell you.
I know. You love me and you lay awake all last night thinking about me, huh?
Please don't joke. I'm serious. Very serious.
Oh. Okay, let's hear it.
I don't know just how to tell you.
Hey, wait a minute. Hey, let me look at you. Have you been crying?
No, no, of course not. It's just, Tom, I'm married.
Married? You're kidding.
No, it's true. I should have told you before, but I didn't want to hurt you. And I tried to tell myself it wasn't wrong to steal a few days of happiness. My aunt made me see differently. We must never see each other again.
No. No, you don't mean that.
Yes. Don't you see it's for the best? We must be grateful for the memory of a beautiful adventure.
And now I suppose you're going back to your husband.
I must. It's my duty.
Where is he?
In Chicago.
And what about Aunt Olga and Uncle Carlos? Will they go too?
I suppose so.
And the pearls?
Yes, they are. The what?
The pearl necklace that was stolen in New York and that you slipped into my pocket at the border.
You mean you've known all about them?
Sure I have.
But why didn't you say something?
Oh, and scare you away? Look, I only get 4 weeks vacation. I couldn't go chasing you all over Mexico. You know? Besides, do you think I wanted the girl I love to travel with those two vultures?
The girl you love? Well, don't make fun of me, Tom. You know what I am.
You mean I know what you tried to be and couldn't? You're not a real thief. You're a rank amateur. Those two crooks sold you a bill of goods, and I've just been sticking around here waiting for you to get wise to them. Say, who cooked up that story about the husband in Chicago?
Olga.
That's what I thought. What about the necklace?
Carlos.
He has it, huh? Mm-hmm. Check. Now, let's go and pay him a little visit.
Oh, no, Tom, we can't.
Oh, come on. I want to show Uncle Carlos I'm somewhat of a magician myself.
Get out, Dr. Bradley. What right have you to break in my room this way?
I came for that pearl necklace, Uncle Carlos.
Please, Carlos, we've got to have it. Our whole lives depend on it.
Don't make me laugh.
Are you going to hand it over?
You think I'm crazy? You're a fool, Bradley, if you're in love with this girl. And you're twice a fool if you think I'm going to give you the necklace.
Now, look, Uncle Carlos, I don't want to argue.
I'm not right with you. Get out, both of you.
All right. All right, we'll go in a minute. Oh, but first I want to show you a little magic of my own.
What do you mean?
Well, look, now you see this hand? Now watch closely. Now it's a fist.
Look out, the gun.
Now I draw the fist back and... Hand is quicker than the gun, see? Quick, Madeline, get the pearls out of his pocket.
Here they are. What about the gun?
Oh, I'll leave it there. Maybe he'll wake up and shoot himself. Now, come on, lady, we aren't finished yet. We're heading back to New York.
Yes, Pierre, what is it?
A lady and gentleman, they have asked for your personal attention.
Ah, they wish to purchase something very special and very expensive, no doubt. I will go to them, Pierre. Monsieur, madame, I Henri Duval am at your... So, it's you again.
How do you do, Mr. Duval? Allow me to introduce my fiancé, Tom Bradley.
Hello. Hey, look, what have you got in the way of wedding rings?
Wedding rings? Mm. Wedding rings! What about my beautiful pearl necklace?
Oh, we don't want to buy a pearl necklace.
No. The pearl necklace you stole worth $200,000.
Stole? Mr. Duval, you're either joking or crazy.
Oh, you will find out I am not joking.
Oh, then you admit you're crazy, huh?
Yes. No! Who's crazy?
When did you first dream about this necklace, Mr. Duval?
Police! Police!
Mr. Duval, you must answer Mr. Bradley's question.
Which side do you sleep on? Your left?
Do you wear pajamas or nightgowns?
That is none of my business. You can talk till you are black in the eyes, but you can't put the wool over my face and make me believe I am not crazy.
Poor man.
Mr. Duval, what makes you think your pearls were stolen?
Oh, what makes me think? Because they are gone.
No. Look, I don't believe it. You know what I think? I think they're right in your coat pocket.
In my coat pocket? You are the one who was crazy. Look, in the right one, there is nothing but a checkbook. In the left one, there is nothing but... Mon Dieu, the necklace.
There, you see? You'd better do something about yourself, Mr. Duval.
Yes, before it's too late.
Yeah, sure. Well, now, how about the wedding ring?
Oh, one moment. Pierre!
Yes, Monsieur Duval?
You will take care of the customers. I must see Dr. Henderson immediately. Oh, it is unbelievable. The great Henri Duval has gone crazy as a March herring. Good day, madame. Monsieur?
What is with you?
With him, it's straitjackets. With us, it's wedding rings. Try them out, will you?
Oui, monsieur. Will madame try this one for size?
Of course. Then...
Comfortable?
Mm-hmm.
Happy?
Mm-hmm.
Where are we going on a honeymoon?
But of course, there's only one place we could go.
Oh, but of course. South of the border, down Mexico way.
Thank you, Marlene Dietrich and Fred McMurray, for a swell performance. And thank you, too, Helen Deutsch, for a grand radio script. And now, come in.
Mr. Pryor?
Yeah?
I have a telegram here for Miss Dietrich. It's from thousands of men all over America.
Oh, what is it? Well, that's the first time I ever heard a whistling telegram.
No, I think it was awfully charming, don't you, Bud?
Uh-huh. I sent it.
Thank you. Remind me to give you a kiss later.
Oh, no. You kiss me now.
All right, if you insist. But, Jeez. Bud, why did you make me kiss you now? I would have kissed you later. Don't you believe me?
Oh, sure, Marlena, but you see, the trouble is with most people is they just keep putting things off and putting them off, and then they forget all about it.
Not you particularly, but most people are procrastinators, including me. Why, take so many motorists, for instance. They just keep putting off getting their cars ready for winter until it's too late, and whango, they get whanged right square in the pocketbook with an expense that could have been avoided. So, look, play safe, hmm? Go to your good Gulf dealers tomorrow, first thing, and have him give your car that Gulf Winter Guard service.
The Gulf Screen Guild Theater on Tuned to Yesterday from December 1st, 1940 on CBS. And this would mark the second appearance from Marlena Dietrich on the Gulf Screen Guild Theater. The previous one, about a year before that broadcast, she sang Falling in Love Again, the song that made her famous, and was on episodes of the Abbott and Costello Show with Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy, also extending her work to radio of her contributions to the war effort via the USO. On their farewell program in January of 1948, Dietrich actually played the musical Saw. It's an hour of adventure on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark LeVonier. And now we turn to Orson Welles for the Mercury Summer Theater. From July 5th, 1946 on CBS, we hear the story, A Passenger to Bali.
Good evening. This is Orson Welles, your producer of a special series of broadcasts presented by the makers of Pabst Blue Ribbon, the Mercury Summer Theater of the Air.
Tonight and every Friday night, blended, splendid Pabst Blue Ribbon presents you with a front row seat at one of the greatest plays ever produced.
Tonight, the Mercury brings you one of the most effective short novels of recent years, written by Ella St. Joseph, A Passenger to Bali.
Most secret, most urgent. To the Commission for Inquiry, a confidential report concerning the disappearance of His Majesty's ship Roundabout, lost somewhere in the China Seas. Here follow excerpts from the log of Captain English, that's myself, master of the Roundabout. In Shanghai, Central China, October of last year, a foggy night.
Captain English!
That was the first time I heard that man's voice calling my name. It has been ringing in my ears ever since. That was the first time I saw his enormous figure in its bell-shaped greatcoat. A figure that haunts me still.
Captain English!
Yes, who is it?
I am the Reverend Dr. Ralph Walks, a Dutch missionary bound for Bali, there to distribute Bibles and spread the word of the Lord.
What can I do for
you? Your hand, sir. The Lord has brought us together tonight, Captain. What the Lord has put together, let no man put asunder.
Isn't that your marriage sermon, Dr. Walks?
A first meeting is a marriage.
Or a parting.
Captain, you're looking at this thing men call my face. Have you seen it before?
No.
So much the better. The meeting, sir, is a marriage.
Dr. Walks threw a palpable shadow over the whole ship. Something you couldn't put your finger on. A sort of restlessness. Unspoken dissension among the crew. Even the officers.
He gets me to lie down in the green pastures. He prepares the table for me in the presence of my enemies. Amen. Gentlemen, I have an excellent appetite today.
I congratulate you, Dr. Walks. You've made a conquest of our cook.
The quickest way to a ship's heart is through its belly, sir.
Why not go straight to the heart?
A practicing missionary, Captain English, cannot afford an impractical idealism, opportunism, strategy.
I'm amazed at you, sir. A man of the cloth talking that way.
You believe even in violence, Mr. Walks, to attain your end?
Even without an end, Captain English. Force! Force! Grab what you can in your fists. Throw the scraps to the weak. That's the law of nature.
No right to talk like that.
Gentlemen.
It's unholy.
Well, I won't sit at the same table with a...
With a... What? Of what, Mr. Stagg?
I don't know what. I've no name for the likes of you.
The Stagg has had his fill. Yeah. What about you, Mr. Wrangle?
That's the kind of thing you preach to the natives. I'm sorry for him. Excuse me, Captain.
Goodbye, Mr. Wrangle. Yeah, we're alone now, Captain. Are you with me, sir?
No, Mr. Watts. You're with me on my ship, which you seem to have forgotten. The next morning, we lay off the shallow water of Beulah Long, the port of Bali.
Captain English, sir. Captain English, I beg a word with you.
Surely, Mr. Walks, you're not so poor in words that you need to beg one.
Here are $200 in the currency of God's own country. I'm hiring one of your lifeboats for the brief period of half an hour to get ashore.
I'm afraid that's impossible.
Must I swim for it?
I wouldn't if I were you. That's the government launch.
Government
now.
Launch? Listen, then. This is your last chance. Yours as well as mine. Get me off this boat or take the consequences. I swear it. You ransack the four corners of the globe looking for this minute. Don't let it slip through your fingers. There's eternity in it.
I am Van Matsys, Captain, Chief Inspector of the port.
How do you do?
So I look over your papers. Bills of lading. Manifest. What is this, a declaration? A passenger? You say you're a passenger? A missionary?
Well, certainly I see nothing peculiar about that.
But we are not permitting a missionary here in Bali for many years. They're causing too much trouble with the natives. All the world knows this.
How do you do?
Dr. Walks, Minervan Matches.
I'm very, very glad to meet you, sir.
Oh, it is you. This morning I wake, the birds sing, the sun is shining. Why is no volcanic eruption warning me that you are coming?
My good sir, I am the eruption.
But how is it possible you are coming as a clergyman here to Bali?
I had no time for shopping, my dear sir. This is the only suit that would fit there.
They are not making clothes big enough to fit you, eh?
No.
No, no countries either.
No!
Captain, this gentleman is not a Dutchman.
No, of course
he is not a missionary. He is what you call an international figure.
Yes,
what's that? Everywhere he goes, he is making trouble.
First in the West and now in the East.
Well, please be clear, sir. What does he do? What has he done?
Only God is knowing that. Last year, 5,000 coolies were following him from the cotton mills in Wuzhou, not 2 hours from Shanghai.
6,000 coolies, sir.
Oh, that's very interesting, but what am I to do with him?
Well... The Dutch East Indies are close to him. I do not know where is not close to such a man. I doubt you will lose him, ever. Here he is on this ship. He belongs to you.
Would you turn me into a flying Dutchman, sir?
A flying Dutchman. That's right, Mr. Wolf.
A flying Dutchman.
After Bali, the news of our flying Dutchman flew like a screaming gull before our mast. In Makassar, Banjarmasin, Rembang, Batavia, Koba, Pekan, Singapore, Bangkok, the answers were all the same.
No, Capitaine, you cannot land him here. We do not want him. We won't have him.
We want none of him. We know him. He's a pest, a plague, this man. The port is closed to Mr. Walks. Moreover, so long as he is on your ship, the port is closed to your ship.
It's impossible to say when or how, but slowly, imperceptibly, our passenger came to take possession of the ship and all its crew. The natives fell more and more deeply under his spell. I was their captain in name, he in fact. We were his prisoners, not he ours. He all but emptied our stores with his huge appetite. Sacrificing all hope of profit, all hope of everything but emptying our ship of that loathsome passenger, we set our course west under ballast to Shanghai. There, port officials informed us that the British consul, a Mr. Chisholm, was to favor us with a personal visit. But it was noon before he came aboard.
The Chinese port authorities informed me of your predicament, Captain, and asked me to handle it in my own manner.
So much the better for all of us.
According to their specific instructions.
Oh, I don't understand, Mr. Chisholm.
Well, my dear fellow, don't try. It's diplomacy. Only the stupid try to understand diplomacy, and they spoil the game for the rest of us. It's like playing blind man's buff with a really blind man, and that makes it too macabre. Oh, I say, wouldn't you ask me to sit down?
Oh, please, please.
Thank you. I see there's a cold draft on my back. Would you mind closing the door?
A draft? In this heat?
Diplomacy, my dear fellow. A diplomatic way of suggesting we may be overheard.
Oh. And now, Mr. Chisholm?
Oh, yes, yes, sir. Where were we?
We hadn't begun.
Well, to be sure, you're Flying Dutchman. Of course, you can't land him here.
I can't? What?
The
what?
Man's a bounder.
What did you say?
The man's a bounder, you know. Shanghai has its quota of bounders.
But I understood Shanghai wants him. The police are looking for him.
Mr. Walks would certainly be arrested if he set foot on land, but he will not be given the opportunity. This saves the Chinese government a complicated legal procedure and the trouble and expense of providing for him.
What of my trouble? What of my expense?
Really, my friend?
A man is on my boat and I can't get rid of him. No port will accept him. Worse than that, no port will receive us while he's on board. They've turned him into a Flying Dutchman and have turned us into a phantom ship. My crew is not allowed to land, not even to desert. Am I expected to sail him round the world all the rest of my days?
Captain, the man you have on your ship carries no passport and is claimed by no country. Legally, he doesn't exist. And as such, no flag protects him. He has no rights, and if he were suddenly to disappear, no questions would be asked.
Yes.
You know, if I were in your shoes, Captain, I'd go for a walk around the deck with him on some dark night.
But that's murder.
I fail to see how you can murder a man who doesn't exist. I shall anticipate a bit and report that your passenger does not exist. I found no one on the boat that remotely resembles Mr. Walks.
Am I a ghost, gentlemen?
Oh, Mr. Walks, I didn't hear you coming.
Is this the English consul, the august representative of Great Britain?
As I was saying, Captain, I shall report that there is no such person as Mr. Walks. Your passenger doesn't exist. Nevertheless, I must take the proper precautions. I shall report that I found plague on board. Cholera, I think, or bubonic.
Would you turn me into a disease?
China can control bubonic.
Oh?
She has no antidote for Mr. Walks.
No, you don't, Mr. Chisholm. I'm big enough to fill this doorway, but I wouldn't try to pass if I were you. I'm a catching disease, I warn you. The captain and the crew have caught me, and I'm fatal to them. Try to pass me, and you'll catch it yourself. Do you see, Mr. Chisholm? When I'm in your way, you've got to take notice of me. By heaven, I do exist. That's all, sir. May leave. With my permission. Well, Captain English, we are as we were.
No, Mr. Walks. I'm going to take Mr. Chisholm's advice.
Oh, has he suggested one more port, still another? It'll take me, is there? Such a place. Such a land on earth.
Have no doubt they will accept you there.
Will they? Should hardly have thought it possible. Even if I were to die, I doubt if you'd lose me. You'd probably carry me back and forth between heaven and hell.
The barometer's falling out on the China seas. Bad weather's on the way. Aboard His Majesty's ship, the Roundabout, the queer and evil Reverend Dr. Rob Walks is still a passenger to Bali.
The wheel starts to kick up. We may need to lash her.
I say, Captain, I've been thinking a good deal these last 2 days about, you know, this situation of ours, about Walks.
What's to keep us from giving him a light boat and some food and sitting him adrift?
He'd starve to death.
But we wouldn't be there to see it, would we?
No, that's impossible. It's inhuman.
I suppose you'd sooner see him drown, eh? Kinda.
Drown?
Why not, sir? It's going to be a dark night, isn't it? If a man fell overboard tonight...
Who told you to say that?
Why, nobody, sir. It stands to reason.
It's beyond reason.
Listen, sir, we can't carry him from now until the day of judgment.
Mr. Stagg, report to the engine room. Full speed ahead. Fire the boilers to top steam. Keep her headed into the wind.
Aye, sir.
Batten down the hatches. Call all men on deck that aren't in the engine room. Secure everything. I'll see to the wind.
Aye, aye, sir.
Dirty weather. Dirty weather, eh, Captain?
Walks.
Are you surprised you're thinking of me, or were you conspiring with the wind and the waves?
I must be on the bridge, Mr. Walks.
Tell me, sir, why do you hate me?
What?
This is no time for equivocation. If you must spare me that. Give me the reason, one good reason. Why do you hate me?
You tricked me into accepting you on this...
Your animosity began long before. Before you knew me for what I am.
I hated you the night I picked you up off the wharf. I found my reasons later. That night, Mr. Waltz, I hated you without cause.
Thank you. You hated me before you knew anything about me. And you must have hated me for some reason within yourself, Captain.
I must go up to the bridge.
You are to blame, not I. You and the civilized world. Your world. That have bound me to you.
Let go.
But civilization is rotting, Captain. Because its origin is fear. The vacuum that nature abhors. Like the center of this hurricane upon which the four winds of the earth are converging.
Captain English!
Let me go.
For 2,000 years, the strong have been sacrificed to the weak. With what result? To imprison the strong, the weak have imprisoned themselves.
The wheel, Captain English, the wheel!
That is why you abominate me, Captain. Because I've destroyed your illusion of freedom and betrayed you to yourself. I am the opposition! You know what the British Consul, Mr. Stagg, told you to do? Well, I do. Here we are at the railing's end. Why don't you do it? If our positions were reversed, do you think I'd hesitate for a moment? I'd move quietly. I'd take a sudden step forward.
I will! By heaven, I will!
Fool! You're not strong enough. This ship is mine. I'll never leave it. Get up. I give you back your life. It would have died with your conscience. You would never have survived me.
The wheel! Captain, the wheel! The wheel! Loose! Set
the wheel loose! Get loose! Leisure! Ah! Back to lightning. The whirling wheel, the huge wooden wheel in flared outline, spinning. It would chop our hands off if we touched it. And the ship was shrieking in a death agony. Her life was a matter of moments. With an uncontrollable rudder, she would drive herself down into the deep. A great wave struck the walls and broke in the door and descended upon us. As the ship raised her shoulders above the sea and the water washed out through the whirling wheel, we saw looming in the doorway an immense figure. With the salt water running down him, dripping from his face and fingers, Mr. Walks might have risen from the sea itself.
Out of the way!
Mr. Walks, you can't stop that wheel! It'll kill you!
I'll stop it if I have to smash it!
Ah! Walks! Walks!
He's done it! He's got the wheel on his back!
I've got the ocean. The whole ocean on my back. Gentlemen, I doubt if it will be necessary.
What's that? What's that you say?
I'm holding nothing. The ship's rudder has just snapped.
Next morning, the ship was a corpse, floating face upward, wrecked and mangled beyond all recognition. We were 200 miles off the coast of China. We had no wireless, and the roundabout past control or repair might sink before she was sighted by another vessel.
Then your mind's made up, Captain?
Yes, Mr. Stagg. Are all men on deck?
Aye, sir.
Then who's been ringing the ship's bell?
No one, sir.
A ghost. A ghost bell. On a ghost ship.
Shut up, Wilkes. The rope's broken, Captain. The bell's ringing by herself.
Yes.
It's a swain that does it.
This is the Flying Dutchman's demon vessel. We drift rudderless in a fog in all directions and to no port.
He's out of his mind, sir.
Let him talk. Let the bell toll. We've no time for either of them. We're abandoning ship.
Women and children first. The roundabout is no more. This is manifold. The vast boat is a whole world. The mountains are her masts. The middle of her hull are a pivot for the moon. Her cables are the circumference of St. Peter's Dome and extend around the globe.
The ship is sinking, Mr. Watts.
Her lower masts are so high that a boy becomes a gray-headed man. Before he reaches the futtock shrouds, she takes 100 years to tack. And when one of her sailors dies, she buries civilization.
Into the lifeboat, men.
You've a long way to row, Captain, with me in tow. Who'll pick up a doomsday passenger? Row on, sir. Row on! Touch land. And away we go.
Into the boat, men. Easy does it.
See, they leave room for me. Leave room. I'm a man that likes to stretch his legs.
Are you so sure of yourself?
Oh, yes. As sure as I am of you, Captain. I rely upon your charity, pity, mercy, your holy virtues that are oil for the faulty machinery of justice. Where love leads justice, the blind lead the blind.
Then it would be just to leave you behind.
You don't dare. You don't dare to leave me behind.
How well you know me, Mr. Walker. I suppose you even rely upon my gratitude.
Gratitude for what?
You saved the ship last night.
Gratitude? I saved you last night as a soldier infested by lice might crouch beneath cannon fire and thus rescue himself and them from a common death. Gave you a thought.
I see. All right, Mr. Stagg, we're ready. Give the order to abandon ship.
Captain, this time I obey your order gladly.
It wasn't meant for you, Mr. Walks. You're not going.
What's that?
You always wanted my ship. I'm giving her to you. She's yours.
I'm not going!
Now you are the captain. I needn't remind you of a captain's duty to stay with his ship.
You'd leave me on the roundabout.
She may float for a week or an hour. You'll be safe for a while, and there'll be food enough even for you. I wish you a pleasant journey, wherever you're going.
I'll see you rot first.
Ready, Mr. Stagg?
Aye, sir.
Into the lifeboats, men.
Wait!
Don't listen to him, sir.
Well?
Captain. Captain, I've no excuse. I'm the lowest of the low. My home is deeper than the grave, deeper than the sea. You're right to desert me.
Then there's nothing more to say.
But have you no pity, Captain? Captain, have you no charity, no mercy?
Oil, you called it. Goodbye, Mr. Walks.
Not so soon. Don't forget I'm your shadow, your doppelganger, your doomsday passenger.
Mr. Walks, I warn you.
Your voice isn't loud enough for me to hear.
Stay where you are. Now, if I shout through the muzzle of this gun, you may hear the whisper.
I hear you very well now.
It's a pity it had to end this way. I would move heaven and earth.
Heaven and earth will stay where they are, sir. So will I.
Very
cast off, sir.
I'm coming, Mr. Stagg. My sextant, Mr. Walks. You'll need it.
Not I! I'll shoot the sun and stars with more than a sextant before I die. Get along, sir, and whistle for the wind. We'll be meeting again soon enough. Lower away!
We pushed off with no other sound than the movement of our oars. Walks followed us around the deck and finally lifted his hand and waved. We moved apart. As the loom of the great hull grew shadowy, only a little heavier and darker than the enveloping whiteness, his colossal figure seemed to dwarf the vessel. The roundabout rose gradually out of the black and silver water and heaved to in midair as though awaiting a message. Then the hulk dilated in the fog and faded on the horizon like sea mist in the morning sun. We could see nothing but our own strained faces dimly in the milky light.
Our Mercury production of A Passenger to Bali.
The Mercury Summer Theater, on Tuned to Yesterday from July 5th, 1946 on CBS. And that brings to a close this hour of adventure on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVanier. Thanks for tuning in.